Monday. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write. And boy, oh boy, I was just listening to the program before me, and they were talking about Canadians, and I did not realize that 3 million Canadians usually come down to Florida. Oh, I do hope that they open the border and that they can come down, because we are having glorious weather, and I know they will love it. My brother, who is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, you know, I'm a Youper. he had 45 degrees the other night, and he texted me. He said, you know, do you want some of this cold air? I said, yes, a little bit, just a little bit. But we are having glorious weather, and of course, it gets better and better as we go through the fall. Well, I hope that the Canadians can start coming down again, because we need them. We need them for our economy. And they're also fun. I love seeing a Canadian license plate. You know, the ones who drive down, every summer I do the same thing. I've been playing that, you know, license plate game since I was a kid. And of course, I love to see where they come from. You know, they come from so far away, and it's always fun. Anyway, that's going to be happening, I hope. And I just want to, again, I have been really thrilled with what's happened lately with my program. I have been giving out every week. I started, you know, really giving out my email address, patsy.radio@gmail.com. And you are wonderful. You people are wonderful, sending me fantastic emails about the books you love, about the interviews that I do that you love. I just really want you to know how much I appreciate it. And of course, I love to hear your suggestions for guests. And as a result of that, some of the guests, upcoming guests in the next few months, are really by your suggestion, people that I hadn't thought about inviting, but you suggested them. So this is really exciting. And I also am very appreciative of those ones of you who have sent me emails saying that you're writing and that you love my new segments that we just started here with Jim Lamb, and they are called Literary Gems, Lit Gems, from Jim Lamb. So we're going to play one, and then after that, Jim is going to be on the phone and talk to us about not just that, but also about his book. So let's start with Literary Gem. This is a good one, because I am guilty a little bit of using a lot of adverbs, so this is fun.
Mark Twain said, if you see an adverb, kill it. Elmore Leonard said, using adverbs is a mortal sin. And I can't even repeat what Stephen King said, the horror. An adverb is a part of speech that, when used right, is heavenly, but when used too often, yuck. Hi, I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. There was a popular TV show for kids back in the 70s called Schoolhouse Rock. I loved it. Schoolhouse Rock covered a variety of topics, including grammar, science, history, and math. My favorite episode was about adverbs. It went like this. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Got a lot of lolly, jolly adverbs here. The lively little tune explained that an adverb is a word that modifies a verb. It can also modify an adjective, another adverb, or even a group of words. The Lolly song claimed that an adverb was positively very, very necessary. There's just one problem. It's not necessary, that is. Why? Because some writers overuse adverbs. Others don't know how to use them. And some writers use adverbs to add to their word count without adding any value. And that's a very, 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 very wrong thing to do. However, when used wisely, an adverb can clarify. For example, take this sentence. The painter painted the house. Makes sense, doesn't it? Now let's add an adverb. The painter painted the house neatly. Notice how the adverb clarifies what kind of job the painter did? Another nice thing about adverbs is how quick you can make one. Quick becomes quickly by simply adding an ly. Slow becomes slowly. Neat is transformed into neatly. And remember, an adverb can modify or qualify, and in doing so express a relationship in terms of time, space, circumstance, manner, cause, or degree. For example, consider the following. I thought the movie ended abruptly, and Jenny's teacup must be handled gently. My neighbor answered the survey truthfully. Here's some context. Carefully, correctly, and easily are adverbs of manner. Adverbs of place, here, there, outside. Adverbs of time, early, soon, tomorrow. Adverbs of frequency, always, daily, seldom. So remember, use adverbs thoughtfully, carefully, but with restraint. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about adverbs.
Okay, well, that's great, and I have Jim Lamb on the line. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Oh, wow. It's so nice to have you on. And as I was saying at the beginning of the program, I have had such a nice reaction from people who appreciate these literary gems that you are giving us, because it helps focus, you know, for people, so many people who, you know, they went through high school, but they didn't actually learn very much about writing. And so sometimes they're afraid. They're afraid of simple terms like adverbs. And when you explain it so nicely, they start thinking, yeah, you know, I understand that. I can do that. And so I'm really happy with what you've been doing, Jim.
Well, what I tried to do is take something that needs to be clarified, like adverbs, but also some of the more recent ones, like what is a protagonist? We hear that word, and for the people who are familiar with it, they take it for granted. But for the average person, they might not have any idea. Although more often than not, you could say the protagonist is the hero of the story or the main character of the story. So I'm trying to simplify, make people's life a little easier, and I'm trying to do them in 2 to 4 minutes, so you don't have to watch a 45-minute video to figure out what the key point of it is.
And you're doing a great job. I really, you know, the metaphors one. I had so many nice comments from my listeners, and it's been really great. You know, for a long time there, I sort of stopped giving out my email. I just thought, well, you know, I don't get that many. And then once I started again, wow. Well, it's partly because I think of the whole pandemic year. People had more time to listen, more time to think about writing. And so it's just been fun, the reaction I've had.
Well, the thing I love about the show, and I had to be one of your original visitors to the studio back in March of 6 years ago, was your exuberance. And you're embracing of not just writing, but books and reading and Clearwater. It gets caught up in it when people don't realize. And I'm going to try to give them some little tricks this morning. Is they look at a blank piece of paper and get very intimidated because they think they have to write an entire page at one time and have it all make sense the first time. Whereas one of the tricks I do is, I start with some research and just general ideas. I might have a page of ideas and not one sentence on it, because when I'm trying to get started, I'm not worried about the finished product. I'm looking at it like kindling to build a fire.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I want always to get through to people, that you just have to start. It's funny. Once you start putting words on paper, it might be a sentence. It might be your research first, and then you look at it and you say, well, you know, I could write a sentence about that. Then I can write a sentence about that. And then you start, and it gets so exciting. It really changes your outlook on life, I think.
No, you're exactly right. And the thing is, and I like the idea of insight, is that when you're thinking of it, it's sort of like ping pong balls bouncing around in the room. When you get something on paper, now you have that energy that was inside your brain, you beginning to take it under control and give it direction. And if you like a metaphor, for example, is the idea of taking clay. Well, when you start off with clay, it's really somewhere, it's smoother than a rock, but it's not really putty. But as you work it and work it and work it, it begins to move under your hand, and words on the page are the same way. As you work them and move them around and get ideas from the ideas you've written, something begins to form, and then you have that moment of clarity, and you know what you've got.
And it's magical. It's magical. And one of the things, of course, the reason I want you on today, you know, Vietnam, wow. I've been thinking a lot about Vietnam lately. You know, I was very happy that I got to talk to Robert Dugani about his book, The World Played Chess, which is a fantastic book about Vietnam, where he follows three young men at the age of 18 and really tells the story very, very dramatically and with a great deal of understanding about Vietnam. But you know, you have the actual Dugani is, you know, Bob is a wonderful guy, and he writes beautifully, and he did just met a lot of people and really got into the whole subject of Vietnam, just as I have with my project for the F-105 Warriors. But you are a real vet, and you really lived it. So tell us about your book about Vietnam.
Well, it's funny that we're talking about this, because 50 years ago, next week, I got out of the Navy, and 50 years ago, I believe in August, I left Vietnam. And in Vietnam, and I'll just give you kind of the lowest point in Vietnam for me, because I worked on radios and airplanes, and I had it fortunate, but I saw guys who came in and out of the jungle, and there's a phrase from a song in the 60s that escapes me, but the phrase was, he had a tombstone look in his eyes. And that's what struck me when I saw some of the guys who've been out on the trail and came back. The jungle is a tough place to be. I stood guard at the end of Da Nang runway, where it was overrun for the Tet Offensive. And just looking at it gives me the shivers. Thinking about it gives me the shivers. But the biggest thing is I was away from my family. In fact, I didn't tell my mom and dad I was in Vietnam, so I got back because I didn't want them to wonder. But I actually, once you're there and settled and you develop that sort of network of friendship, you feel so comfortable. But then a rocket comes in and, you know, hits the barracks, or a rocket comes in and takes out part of the runway, and you're reminded you're in the middle of a war. And for me personally, it was... It forced me to really take an assessment of my life and, you know, look at things. And because it had such an impact on me, although I never thought about writing a book, I would tell people stories about things that happened in Vietnam, mostly the funny things, because that's what made the day seem to be bearable. And I over a period of 5 years, to show you how a book doesn't always jump out at once, I just took notes. That's all. I had a little thick notebook I carried around. And I filled it up, and once it was filled up, I went back and typed all of those notes up, and I double spaced it, or triple spaced it, so I could write in between the lines. And as I analyzed what was there, I said, well, this could be a story, and that could be a story. And once I had set the stories, I went back and wrote the stories, and then I put them together like a string of pearls. So it was not starting at the beginning, going to the end, but that first idea, as we mentioned earlier, just writing was, sometimes it was a single word to kind of trigger something later on. Sometimes it was a sentence, sometimes it was a paragraph. But the idea, I had something on paper. So when I started writing, it wasn't the blank page. It was words I already had, and then I began to work those words together into little stories.
And you came out with a title, a very fascinating title, and I love the cover of your book, too, by the way. It's called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, How I Survived Vietnam and Kept My Sense of Humor. And as I said, the cover is bright, and it's a very eye-catching cover.
It looks so simple, but it took me 2 months, because when I worked at the Tampa Tribune, you know, in addition to being a reporter and copy desk editor, for about a year I was an associate graphic editor. So I had an eye for design, but I wanted something that, I mean, a cover of a book, you'd probably get 3 to 8 seconds for someone to make a decision whether or not they're going to open it up. So I wanted a bright color. I wanted a kind of a provocative title. And then on the cover, I used what they call a balloon text. And the font I used inside the balloon text was the one they used for comics on Sunday. And so there was a lot of, there was a subliminal message of humor built into it, as well as this brightness, because I wanted to show that in Vietnam, and even the guys who had some of the tough times, because I've helped one Vietnam veteran who had is the best buddy, his best friend, shot right beside him while they sat in a foxhole. Even out in the jungle, you had moments of humor. And God only knows, sometimes the humor is the one thing that gets you through the day. So that's what I wanted to share in my book.
Well, how old were you when you went to Vietnam?
Oh, you just dipped into math, my worst subject. Let's see. I'm 74 now.
Were you in college? Had you gone to finish college, or how did you get? How did you get in the military? By the way.
Oh well, now, Patsy, you do know how to get me. I got drafted, and I didn't want to go in the Army because I thought, you know, if I'm going to get something, I might as well get an education. So I joined the Navy. Plus, I liked the peacoat jackets.
Oh, that.
I signed up thinking I was going to go and get training in something I wanted, because I believe that, and any veterans out there will know what I'm talking about. I believe what the recruiting officer said. what is that line? And that was my first mistake. And once I got in the Navy, it turned out they said, based on testing, I had an aptitude for electronics. And that was not true. What I had an aptitude for was taking tests that gave you choices like true and false and A through D. So I passed the test with flying colors. They put me in the Navy, they put me in the training school. But the problem was, one of the key things about working on radios is working, you know, with your fingers. You're working on tiny things with little screwdrivers, and I am so clumsy. And so, very troubleshooter. So I had a friend that loved to work on radios, but hated to troubleshoot. So I would take his radios and find the problem, and then he would fix them. Then I would take my radios and find the problem, and he would fix them. And it was like a relationship made in heaven, because he hated to think. He just liked to do things with his hands. I was too clumsy to do things with my hands, but I loved the idea of solving puzzles. So that's my whole success in the Navy was based, I was a good puzzle solver.
Well, did you expect, I mean, you were perhaps thinking about being on a ship. Did you expect to be on land in Vietnam?
The airplanes I worked on were so large, they could not land on a carrier. One of them was, and if you remember airlines in the 1950s, one of them was the Constellation. And the Constellation was a plane used by so many people, including Eastern Airlines, which I flew on when I was a kid. It was I still think it's the most beautiful airplane in the world. It's got a tri-tail. It's got a swoopy body. It's got a really cool nose, the way it's featured. And we were flying them up until the 70s, and they were designed in 1939. So they had a long shelf life. The other one was the P-3 Orion, which was the Electra and the civilian version. And the third one was an A-3, which for the Air Force people out there would have been your B-66. But which theoretically could land on a carrier, but it just was so big and clunky that they didn't do it. So I worked on planes too big for carriers when I was in Vietnam. And I would have liked to have gone on a carrier. I came very close one weekend in Pensacola, but I never did.
Oh, and you really mean it? Your parents didn't know you were there?
In fact, when I was in Vietnam, they sent your mail out for free, because it was one of the benefits of being over there.
Benefit.
Cigarettes at 15 cents a pack. But what I did was take my letters and give them to a Navy friend who took them back to Japan, because that's where my base was, at Tsugi, Japan. And then he would put them in the regular mail so it would be stamped Japan and go home. And they never knew until I got out and said, oh, by the way, my mother would have just... I did not want to put that burden on her.
Well, I think, you know, thinking of it as a mother, yes, I can see that you did a great thing for her, because You know, it's still hard to believe that we lost so many men, mostly men, because women weren't at the front lines very, you know, except nurses. And what did we learn from it? You know, the world really was playing chess, and you do think that, you know, we were playing checkers. We didn't know exactly what the next move was.
Well, yeah, the thing is, I thought of this with the whole Afghan situation. I mean, our guys, what they give up in just being away from home is enough. But even in the best situation, and I was in probably the best situation to be in Vietnam, except for when I was on watch, I did not have to go out to the jungle, and during the day I worked in an air conditioned trailer because all of the electronic gear was very sensitive to temperature. Now I didn't have that benefit maybe in my barracks, but I sometimes slept in the trailer just because it was so comfortable in there. But the thing is, just the fact you're away from home, number one. Number two, at any time something can happen, and you know you can be injured or die. And then finally, when you're in a place like Vietnam, and it got this way in Afghanistan, is that you are there fighting a good fight, doing what you're supposed to do, doing what you have to do for your friends and your buddies and the pilots and the co-pilots and the navigators. And yet back home, there's a negative vibe being sent out. So I had to fly in my uniform coming home because it was the only way I could get a free flight. I didn't have the money to pay for it. And I just dreaded going to the airport because you got dirty looks. And I thought, it was bad enough to have given up the time. It was bad enough to have given up that part of my life. But to be treated shabby when we came home, that was really the toughest thing.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for what you're doing for Joy on Paper. And I want to tell people that Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales is it's just a great read. And I'm so happy that, you know, you were able to join me today, talk about it. And I just wanted to mention, you know, as you know, I've been working on this F-105 project for years. Unfortunately, it didn't get green lit in Hollywood. But we're hoping. You never know. Actually, if we can find somebody in Hollywood who knows when the Vietnam War was, it would help. Because I was talking to a producer, had to meet one of those, we took a lunch, and I'm sitting with a producer who was like about 23 years old, and he asked me, Vietnam, was that between World War II and there was a Korean War somewhere. Where was that? And I'm okay. So we live in hope. We live in hope. But thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And we're going to hold on because we're going to play something for you. And again, Jim Lamb, thank you so much.
Okay. Let me give you my website real
quick. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
JSLstories.com. That's www.JSL. Those are my initials. JSL. StoriesPlural.com, and I have a link to some poetry I've written, the literary gems, and some stories. So it's a good place to start if you want to become familiar with my work.
Okay, thanks again, Jim, and stay tuned and listen to this little promo we've done for you.
Thank you.
50 years ago, Jim Lamb left Vietnam after serving in the Navy, where he fixed radios, played ping pong, and swept floors. Jim wrote about his time in the service in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, the story of how he survived Vietnam and kept his sense of humor. The book is available on Amazon. Just type in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. You can also visit his website at www.jslstories.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. And this is exciting because I've been looking forward to talking to her. One of the reasons is I've had her book for a while, and it is so colorful. Every time I walk by it, it's on my reading table, I stop and look at it because I love the cover. Helena Hunting, welcome to Joy on Paper.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, well, it's nice to talk to you. And the name of the book is When Sparks Fly. And as I was saying, I love this cover. It's just one of those covers that grabs your eye. And I think that your publisher did a great job in capturing yours. I think also your writing style. There's that enthusiasm. There's a sort of a punch to your writing. So I love it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I love the cover as well. I think they did a fantastic job.
And that's important. So,
yes, it is.
Well, and then, of course, I must say, I love your name too, Helena. I just love that name, Helena Hunter.
Oh, Hunting. Thank you.
Yeah, Helena Hunting. It sounds like a 1940s movie star name, isn't it? Doesn't it? Is it real? I don't know if it's real.
No.
It's not you captured sort of that essence of the 1940s, the way they named movie stars, and I think it's a great name.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, where do we start with this book? You know, I always hate to sort of give away things, so I'll let you say as much as you want to say, and then. But don't give away too much, because I think one of the fun things about reading a book for me, because I never, other than looking at the cover, I never read anything about it before I start reading it, and I don't want to know. I mean, I don't want to know, you know, what's going to happen. I like that reveal, and as I get into the book, and this particular, well, the opening is a little. Quite funny. I don't know. I couldn't describe the opening anyway, because this is a live on air and I'm not sure I can talk about this. But it's funny.
It's
a little bit. Let's say the next project of your character, because I love the idea. And tell us about this whole idea of the theme hotel and
the event hotel.
Event hotel, yeah. I love themes for parties. And so in an event hotel, I had never thought of it, actually. I don't think I've ever been to an event hotel. And I love the idea.
To an event hotel. So you and me both, I've never been to an event hotel. But I've been to events, right?
Yeah.
So as an author, they'll have conferences. And so you go to a conference and there's usually, like, they are thematic. And because I'm a romance author, and a lot of romance authors will get together and we'll do these big signings. So there is its own theme, right? And then they'll have these wonderful parties where you get to dress up and you get to do all these amazing things. So there's like little pieces of experience in the creation of this event hotel. But Spark House is a hotel that sort of started as a bed and breakfast, but then the one sister is a very athletic, very outgoing person. And so when she took over this hotel with her sisters, she really wanted to take it to the next level. And so they created this event hotel where they would have themed events. You know, sometimes it's a team building event or a corporate event or weddings or bachelorette parties, but they ran with the theme. And so the opening of the story, I feel like we're not giving away too much, is there's a hobby horse event. And if you Google it, you can find YouTube videos, and it is real.
I did, real. Actually. I'm going to tell you, I did. I thought, well, this is very clever, and I thought, no, nobody actually does it. But they do.
They absolutely do. Yes. Yeah, it's quite fascinating, right? So that's sort of where that came from, and then I just kind of ran with it from there in terms of the event hotel, and always different events and always opportunities to be really creative. And I think one of the reasons I was so interested in creating a setting like this is probably because during, you know, over the last year and a half where we've sort of, in Canada, we've been on lockdown a lot. And we would pick a show to watch, and Survivor happened to be a show that my daughter really loved, and like old seasons. And everything is like set up in these, you know, it is like an event. Everything is an event and a challenge. And so I really loved like that idea.
Well, I thought it was clever. As a matter of fact, all the time I was reading the book, I kept saying, oh, if I win the lottery this week, I'm going to buy an old hotel, I'm going to redo it, and I'm going to have an event hotel, because I would have so
Absolutely.
Much fun. It would be, it's such a cool idea, because I love that the changing, you know, always, when I was young, I worked in a hospital, and they put me in charge of changing the lobby decorations for every season of the, and I loved it. The things I created, people were amazed. They'd come to the lobby of the hospital, little hospital, just to see the lobby, because I would come out with all these creative, wonderful ideas. I would go crazy with an event hotel, and your main character
changed the experience of going to the hospital when you walk in.
Yeah,
so inviting.
Right? Well, people loved it, and yeah. I mean, as a result of that, I've been a crafter all of my life, because I come out with all these ideas. I could do it, event hotel. Well, I would be terrific. We have to get together.
Right up your alley.
So if either one of us win the lottery, you know, I had a Canadian on.
Started?
Yeah, I had a Canadian on who won the lottery up there. Like,
wow.
Yeah, like 14 million Canadian dollars. Not bad.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, you know, you never know. We'll have that hotel, because then we will be like Avery, who is very clever, and I like her two sisters. So they're three sisters. Yeah. They take it over from their grandmother, and I like the sisters. I particularly like the London, who is one of the sisters, and I like the name London. What great name for a character. So Avery is the main character. And she, we can explain, you know, she lives with somebody. Explain who she lives with, her old college roommate.
Absolutely. So Avery lives with her best friend, and his name is Declan McCormick. And they went to college together, and they played soccer together, and they've been friends for a long time. And so when his old roommate moved out, they decided together that it would be a good idea for her to move in. And there, it's very much a friends-to-lovers romance. So they start out as friends, but...
Well, we don't want to give it away. I mean, they might turn out to be enemies. Well, it's one of those...
So that things are going to happen.
Things are going to happen, yes. I mean, you put a man and a woman in an apartment, eventually, you never know. But the fun thing, one of the sort of themes in the... It starts off, of course, and we're not going to say too much about it, but it has to do with a high school reunion. College reunion. And I've always found that an interesting theme, an interesting concept, because I've never gone to a college reunion. I never went to a high school reunion. I never went to a reunion. I never wanted to see anybody after.
I feel like sometimes going to high school or college reunions is like a great way to catch up with people, but often I feel like the people that I kept in touch with are I'm still in touch with them, right?
Uh-huh. So have you been to many of these kind of events?
No, I have not high school or college. I went to my convocation, and then that was probably it.
There was a little bit of sort of a shaky feeling of horror when I said that.
I don't think that high school. I'm not a hugely social person, so I feel like a high school reunion would just create anxiety.
So you're in Canada. Are you in the same place where you grew up, or a different place?
I'm a little bit north. So I grew up in Niagara, and I live in Toronto. I'm in Ontario, so I'm just outside of Toronto. So I'm about an hour away from where I grew up.
Oh, so if they have a reunion, you can't say that I'm in Europe, right?
I'm too far away. Yeah.
You know, when one of my reunions came up, and it's the only one I was ever invited to, and I still don't know how the letter got to me, but they sent it to my sister must have forwarded, and I got it, and I was living in Iran at the time, and I sent back a letter saying, thanks. In those days, we wrote letters, actually. I said, I'm you know, on the other side of the world. I can't make it. Do have a wonderful time. I'm sending you my love. So I had a good excuse, but you don't. So I think now that you've written this book, you're going to have to go to that next reunion.
I might have to the next one. And I don't know if that's I think, like, for high school, that would be, I think the 25th reunion is already passed. So it would be, like, 30 years.
Whoa, cool. And you'll probably be the most famous one there, huh?
I don't know.
I bet you will be, because you are, after all, you are like a major best-selling author. I'm sure that they will all be thrilled. You know, New York Times best-selling author, USA Today best-selling author. I think you will probably be the most famous one there. And that means you're going to really have to spiff it up and, you know, really come in very...
I have to come in, like, with a really great dress, I guess.
Oh, yeah, really. Yeah, you have to put on the whole show, famous author.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it'd be fantastic.
I don't feel famous at all, but I think a reunion would be interesting, if nothing.
What will it make... when will you feel you're famous? Because, you know, to be a New York Times best-selling author and a USA Today best-selling author... I think that's pretty famous.
Thank you. I feel like the really nice part about being an author is that you're kind of insulated, because no one really knows what you look like, right? It's not like being famous in the sense that everybody knows who you are.
Well, I think, one of the things you have to do, it's sort of, Mary Higgins Clark told me, she was on the program many times, and she said to me, you know, because I was talking to her about, you know, how she makes them, you know, gets fans and stuff. And she said, you know, one of the things I really do is I learned early on. Now, of course, she was a stewardess in those days when we called them stewardesses, flight attendant.
Yeah.
And she knew how to wear clothes. And so she said, it made such a difference when I dressed up and would go to an event. And I was always, you know, the one that looked like, you know, I really made an effort. People would come up to me, and it really did help my sales in the beginning. So, yeah, it's funny what you have to do when you're an author, right?
It is. I usually have dresses. When I go to an event, I like to dress up and I like to wear dresses.
Well, I think it'll be fun when you have your reunion and you can go and talk about, well, you know, we'll talk about the book. When Sparks Fly is a great title, and there are lots of sparks in here. And as you said, you are a romance author.
I am.
What does that mean today in today's market? What level of romance are you? Some of them more. How can I say more romantic than others?
So I think what we're talking about is steam rating, and how steamy they are. So, and interestingly enough, When Sparks Fly is not by any stretch of the imagination my steamiest romance. But it is, so we differentiate them by calling them either like open door or closed door romance. And so this is definitely an open door romance. So there is like a steam factor involved. And I would say it is a steamy romance, but I mean, in terms of, because I've written quite a few books, so in terms of like the level of steam, so I would say this is probably lighter on steam than some of my other books.
So this is an open door.
We would call it open door, yes.
And have you written the closed door?
No.
No.
I've never written a
No. Okay. No. Okay. No.
They're all open doors.
Okay. They're all open doors. Okay.
The steam, then this is, well, there should be a little bit of a steam warning on it.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a steam. It's a little bit, I had one author on who said, my book's a little bit naughty.
So, yes, these mine are like a little bit plus naughty.
Yeah, contemporarily naughty. what people can say today that 20 years ago we wouldn't write about at all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so they.
Or it wasn't as popular back then.
Exactly, but you've written a very it's a fascinating story. The main, and of course it always comes down to having good characters, and when you have good characters, your readers care about them. And certainly, with Avery, I think, and Declan, you have the right characters. You have two people that your readers will care about, and as I said, also the sisters. I think the whole story is fascinating, and I just got such a kick out of the whole event hotel business, you know, throughout that. I thought it was a wonderful story.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think it really makes a difference when characters feel relatable, and that they're, I mean, human beings intrinsically are flawed. And so being able to give a character flaws, but have them grow throughout the story and recognize errors when they make them, and then find ways to seek forgiveness or to better themselves as a human being. I think that those are relatable, and that's the worst. That's what I'm always striving for as an author.
And I want to mention one of your other books, which I also got a kick out of. Another subject that it really appeals to me, and it's called Kiss My Cupcake, because I also have always wanted to have a cupcake bakery. So all together, we're sort of on the same wavelength about businesses.
Yes. Well, and I think in both of these stories, there's a huge focus on small businesses and family-run businesses, and just like small entrepreneurs. And my dad was a sign painter. He was third generation. and it was a family-run business. And so there's a real, the building of a family business and what it takes to kind of run that and to have those family members who all sort of work together to make this business a success is what means a lot to me as a daughter of a sign painter. And for Kiss My Cupcake, I mean, I love cupcake baking, and it was one of the first things I think I learned how to make as a kid, and really the only reason I learned how to make cupcakes when I was a teenager, or like what child, was so that I could lick the beaters after we moved. that was such a fun book to write, and I had such a fun time, especially with Blair's business, because it's a cupcake shop and they sell alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Cupcakes and booze. Buttercream and booze together. It was fun.
I thought that was a great name for a cupcake bakery. Buttercream and booze. Just the kind of place I'd like to go to. And
exactly, right?
Care Blair, as her father called her,
Care Blair.
Care Blair. I thought she was a delightful character. I like sassy women, and I thought, you know, that's a really nice character. And I liked the way her father talked to her too. I think that's a great book. So that one is Kiss My Cupcake. But first, people should read When Sparks Fly, because my goodness, has it just come out? Oh, wow.
It did today.
Yeah.
It's release day.
It's pub day.
It is.
Wow. So it's exciting. Cool. So do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yeah, sure. It's www.helenahunting.com, and all of my books are on there. And there's links to every single one across all of the different genres that I write. Predominantly I write contemporary romance and romantic comedies.
And also, do you have events coming up, Zoom events and things like that?
I have an IG Live, so an Instagram Live event this afternoon at 4:30. And then I do have a few book events. I'll have a Nook Live coming up in a few weeks, and probably an Amazon Live with my Level 10 Life. And I usually post about them on my social media so that people can come and join in. And
okay, so on Facebook, how do they get you on Facebook?
Helena Hunting.
Okay.
So I have a page, and then on Instagram, I'm at Helena Hunting.
Okay, well, check that out and find out, and you can see Helena on Zoom, one of these Zoom events, and perhaps when you Canadians can start moving around again and coming across the border, when they let you come across the border, because, you know, I just heard today that normally we would expect here in Florida 3 million of you wonderful Canadians, and you guys aren't allowed to come down right now.
No, and we like to escape the winter when we're allowed. It doesn't surprise me that 3 million of us are usually headed your way.
Exactly. Well, you know, I'm right here in beautiful Clearwater, Florida, which is a mega center for Canadians.
Yes, it is.
And we miss you guys because you spend a lot of money down here.
We absolutely do, and we miss being able to be warm in the winter.
Exactly. And I have a couple of friends who have, you know, small businesses, and they miss you. They really miss you. They want you to come down.
Yeah. I think hopefully we can kind of get things under control, and we'll be around. And you never know.
You might make a trip down here to Clearwater. So if you do, then you can come right here in the studio, and we can talk about reunions. How about that? And cupcakes.
Oh, that'd be amazing. That would be amazing.
Okay, so you plan your next trip. Once they open that border up, you get down here to Clearwater, and you will be right here in the studio with me, and we'll have cupcakes. How about that?
That sounds fantastic.
Okay, well, Helena Hunting, I think When Sparks Fly is a great book, and thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Woo! Yes, she is. Don't you like that idea? Buttercream and booze. That is a nice... I actually, I, I do like to have a glass of champagne with a cupcake. So, yeah, well, that would be fun. Anyway, the name of the book is When Sparks Fly. And I want to thank Jim Lamb so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's just fun always to talk to him. And he's been a great supporter of Joy on Paper throughout these years. It's amazing. It's amazing. Again, I want to say my email, because you people are starting to email me like crazy. And I appreciate it. You know, I'm getting quite a few, and so it's really fun. And it's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And Patsy is P-A-T-Z-I. And that's my name, P-A-T-Z-I, Patsy with a Z. And you can email me. And next week, Bill Larson is going to be on, and we're going to be talking about intellectual property and some recent cases that have come up and that are really fascinating. Whoa, 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 people. You never know what's going on out there. And one of the things, of course, is getting back your rights, because sometimes you've given your rights away and, you want them back. And sometimes years later, there is a value, you know. It's called property for a reason, because it has value. And maybe a publisher no longer sees the value in you, but you see a value in your books and you want to re-release them. And you have to get your rights back and you have to learn how to do it. So that's going to be an interesting subject with Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. And if you have any intellectual property questions, just check out Larson & Larson, and he will give you a free consultation. You can talk to him, and also he'll walk you through copyright law, because it is important that you copyright everything, and it's not good enough to just send yourself a sealed envelope in the mail. That does not count. Okay, I just wanted to tell you that. Anyway, this has been a great day, and I want to just thank everybody for emailing me. And keep writing, because remember, one of the things that I always tell you is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries, because they would be so much fun to watch. I need something new on television. Hollywood, listen to me. Contact Carol J. Perry and let's start a new series. I've seen all of your series over and over. I need something new. And Carol J. Perry is a great... I love these Witch City Mysteries. And she has a cat in there called Orion, and I love him too. So everybody... think about what you're going to do in life. And, you know, Carol started writing, and over 6 years later, she has just finished book 12 in her Witch City Mysteries. And you can do that kind of thing too, but you have to start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because I'm running out of time. I've been talking a lot, and he saluted me. I saluted him, because I wish I was a general. Oh, I would be such a great general. Call me, West Point, and I will come and I will give you a lecture, because I would be a great general. And I tell you, I would love to talk to the War College. Everybody, bye-bye now.